Good evening, planet Earth. It's just after 6 p.m. on August the 20th, 2023, Bo Blimp Doc. That's right, and I'm at the Dungeness Spit State Park, staring at the ants as they try to find a way into my tent. I put up the tent, the one that I hadn't put up before. It might work. Those ants, they'll get in if they're hungry. Those ants will find dinner. They'll find something to eat if they need to. There's a movie, and I think it came out in the 70s, called Phase 4. It's a science fiction film about ants becoming collectively super intelligent. Yes, the ants take on mankind for all of his crap. They take on us. They take on people. Because we poison the land. Because we poison the sea. It's not a bad film. I mean, for science fiction films, probably many people would classify it as lower tier. No doubt that people have mocked that film from time to time, but as a kid, it always freaked me out, because when you think about it, one ant by itself is no big deal. But what if a bunch of ants take you on? Like, you go to sleep, some spot, any spot in the woods. Could be near an anthill, could be far away, because the ants will travel. They'll travel. They'll search for food, and then they'll tell their friends, there's something to eat, it's really neat, it's full of meat, the meat is sweet. One of the things I talked about in 2020, prior to the COVID, whatever the hell it was this idea that if we were in a kind of extinction level event, the creatures that would be with us at the end, they wouldn't be the soft, fuzzy creatures, they wouldn't be the bears or the penguins, they wouldn't even be the orcas, which can be rather dangerous, no. The ones with us at the end would be a lot like what Kurt Vonnegut describes in The Great Space Blank, a short story about wasting money going to space. Giant lamprey lurk around the grounds of The Great Space Blank. Giant lamprey, 12 feet tall, knock on your door. You go to greet them. You go to meet them. And you meet your doom. You see, I think it's a fantasy to believe we'll be surrounded by the soft, fuzzy creatures. And I'm not saying it's over. I don't really know what's coming next. But let's say, for the sake of argument, that the scientists who believe we're in the sixth great extinction, let's say they're right. Do we really think it's going to be the wolf and the bear and the cougar and the deer that will be with us at the end? No, 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 my friend. It'll be the screechies and the crawlies. It'll be the things that lay eggs in your brain. You'll go to sleep at night. You'll wake up to a fright. It'll be like the Wrath of Khan, and you'll be gone. Inside your head will be the eggs of insects laid by tiny creatures that care no more for you or I than we have cared for the planet. And they'll lay those eggs and tear you to pieces, and they'll probably gain control. They'll steal your soul, they'll take your bowl, and you will wander the wilderness as a meat sack filled with parasites. Can you hear the noise of the little creepy crawlies? Can you hear the frolic of the time worms? They're out there, waiting in the darkness, to be our friend at the very, very, very ending of things. We'll be surrounded by worms and insects and things that we would wish not to see, things that will crawl up from the bowels of the earth when it's almost over. That's a theory. I was at the McDonald's today, and before you say, Dan, you shouldn't go to McDonald's, well, you're 100% correct. I was using the internet to, like, do stuff, you know, upload podcasts, because I currently don't have, like, what you would call a ordinary internet connection. Yeah, I was at the Mickey D's getting myself the cheapest thing I could find. I got myself a small fry. I figured that would pay for people to be a nice guy. And I can only tell you that the level of tension I felt around me was palpable. There was this sense, and I think it's a real sense, that people are on edge. There was a woman ahead of me in line. She was negotiating with the hostess. Well, if I combine two scrumblix and two pastries, it'll be cheaper than buying the number 6. And the lady said, you could buy the number 3 and get chicken paste and hockey wings and dried out pig flesh. And this made the woman ahead of me quite happy. Well, that's a good deal. That's a lot of protein. It sure as heck is, lady. A lot of protein. Something to take inside. Something that can cook in your belly. Something that one day, maybe in the future, will represent the basis of some new kind of life form. You never know. You never really know. Not on planet Boblimp, Doc. But I'm here. It's nearing, not quite sunset, but the sun is going down. And isn't that appropriate, my friends, my brothers and sisters out there, wherever you are, that I'm podcasting as the sun is going down? There was a lot of tension. I heard a lot of people arguing about stuff that seemed like nonsense. And the hostess volunteered that I was nice, that I was nice, that I was polite. Now, meditate on this, brothers and sisters. When you reach the point in human history where some hostess says, Dan, you're being very polite and nice. Yeah, there was a lot of tension at the Mickey D's, the one in Squim. As I've told you and you know, I don't think it's the end of the world. The world itself is going to keep spinning. And if you're a Christian like me, you know as well as I do that there are many meanings of ends. There's actually something called eschatology, which is the study of how things will end, specifically in a religious context, a Christian context, right? The study of how things will end, but it's not the end. But I do believe that every alarm is going off. And a lot of alarms went off in 2019. It wasn't just the repo crisis, which seems arcane to most normal folks. What's repo? Well, to put it simply, it's interbank lending. And it's interbank lending that is supported by the Federal Reserve. Normally, the amount of time you hold on to cash is measured at most in a couple days, usually in hours. You hold on to this cash that the Fed gives you so that, hey, that ship full of Subarus can show up on time, that ship full of whatever top ramen will be there. But in September and October of 2019, the repo window was expanded. I said at one point, since it became weeks, that you might as well call it push-button quantitative easing. that Jerome Powell could push a button and say, here's some cash. Now, of course, the cash has to be returned in a few weeks after the transactions are completed. But there's a big difference between a few weeks and hours. And that difference is not linear. Does that mean everything turns to crap? No. But it was a sign that something was wrong. And more than a few people noticed it. I mean, there are some famous people, not me, who understood what it meant economically. But what I saw at McDonald's today represented part of what this all means in terms of emotion, in terms of the unconscious that arises to the surface. What Jung would call the collective unconscious, and perhaps we can call the spasm of the unconscious. So things are weird. Karl Marx once referred to the traditional worker viewing the factory process as a process of mystification. Well, what did Karl Marx, wasn't he the commie? And keep in mind, you know, I'm a libertarian, basically, in truth. I'm a little bit farther to Freedom Town than that, as you well know. Call me voluntarist or anarchist, whatever you want to call me. So I'm not a commie, and commies usually kill the anarchists first. So, yeah, that's how I feel about that. But what Karl Marx was describing was this psychological interaction between traditional folk who would make shoes by hand, folk that would exist in a kind of economy where just about everybody could participate as long as they knew a skill, some necessary skill. And then when the factories came to Europe in the late 18th century and early 19th, roughly speaking, the big factories, something changed. All of a sudden, the only skill you needed was to pull a lever, push a button. All you needed to do was sort through a box. And this is what Karl Marx called mystification. I'm going to apply this concept outside the context of the factory and socialism and communism and economics. I'm going to say that with respect to the stuff going on in the world right now, there's a great deal of mystification, a great deal of overwhelming energy with respect to the changes that are occurring. And this amount of energy is so big, so pent up still, that a lot of folks can only look at it in awe, gormlessly approaching them, and since gormlessly looking upon it, they can only be in awe. They don't really have an explanation. The media won't give them an explanation, so they're stuck with mystification. They're stuck with awe, a sense of awe, but not the good kind. Like, for example, if you see a great work of architecture, if you see a building or a mountain, if you see something you can appreciate for its aesthetic features, there's a sense of awe and maybe even a sense of mystification. When you listen to Beethoven, not me, you can be mystified by the art form. But what I'm describing isn't that kind of mystification at all. What I'm describing is people facing something, and I don't know for sure what it is, something that's approaching, and I'm still unclear myself, and in a sense, maybe as mystified as anybody else. And in that space of mystification, there's not much space for logic. There's not a lot of space for reason or common sense. We are mystified and we are confused. We are forced to the edge of our logic. And we are terrified if we allow ourselves to be. And so we stare at our glowing rectangle, our ironically renamed devices, and hope that some source of information, some app, will give us an idea of what it is. I will tell you most assuredly, that glowing rectangle is not going to help you. I'm not going to be preachy and say, get yourself a Bible, although I don't think that's a bad idea from my perspective. But what I can say with a certain amount of directness is that the glowing rectangle is probably not going to help you from being mystified. It might even make it worse. It might even put you into a state of ignorance that you can't escape from, that becomes a kind of trap. And so if I have advice for myself and for all you folks out there listening, break free of the mystification, okay? Break free of the standing in awe of something we don't understand as of yet. And recognize the possibility that a lot of what we're facing has been pumped up as fear. And fear is a necessary thing. You know, fear keeps you from putting your tent down where there might be a crocodile. Fear keeps you from going into a closet sometimes where you know there's a nest of black widows. But fear, without a sense of reason, is problematic. Fear without a solution is like being stuck in fight or flight. You can't run, you can't fight. All you can do is stew in your juices. All you can do is sit there and wait and be mystified. So how about one of the things we all try to do this week is put down the ironically named device and pick up a book. And maybe it'll be an electronic book, that's up to you. It's good to have books that don't need electricity. It's really good. But get yourself a book on science, a book on nature. I have a great recommendation for all my friends out there. There's a book that I mentioned before, written by Conrad Lorenz, King Solomon's Ring. If you have a dog, or any pet really, but if you have a dog and you've raised it from being a puppy, King Solomon's Ring by Conrad Lorenz. If you want to know who he is, well, if you've taken biology, animal behavior, you may have heard of the idea of imprinting. That's Conrad Lorenz. He imprinted himself upon a family of geese. Did you know that? Kind of crazy, right? The geese would follow him around. The geese thought he was mom. And what did they know better? He fed them, he took care of them, and he was there when they opened their eyes. He imprinted himself upon those geese as they were born. So that's a good book. It's not the only book I'd recommend. You know, there are several books that deal with the 14th century. I would totally recommend A Distant Mirror by Barbara Tuchman. I've also mentioned that before. If you're looking for a book that your whole family can read and can be the basis for a college essay, A Distant Mirror by Barbara Tuchman. She talks about the 14th century and talks about how everything pretty much went wrong. In fact, many of the gory details that show up in your, you know, show up in your movies about the Dark Ages, quote unquote, the Middle Ages, which is a generalization, of course, many of those cliches are things that happened in the 14th century, to include the Black Plague. We don't have to simply be in awe, and we don't have to be simply afraid. We should listen to our fear, that makes sense, but we can go beyond it. So next topic. Going to check the time here because you know I'm trying to keep these things around 30 minutes. Did you know that there's a ship that visits from the Hollow Earth called the Monster Cruiser? That's right, there are giant caves within the Earth within which other people live. They're not like you, they're not like me. I don't know if you want to meet them. They're cousins to the mole people. They look a lot like the Sasquatch. The sun blinds them because it's too bright. They understand their nugget self as a kind of cromuli. They perceive a consciousness that you and I could never understand. And every once in a while, that Monster Cruiser, that ship, that Earth ship, comes up to the surface to see what the heck is going on with us. And recently, a famous scientist of the Hollow Earth Academy, Professor Cliban Biggins, determined that the human being is a nugget self, a nugget being, with three states of consciousness. One is called Kelb or Tego. There are 1,053 neural clusters that refer and connect to Tego. The other state of consciousness is called Stigjazi. There are 334 neuron clusters in the brain related to Stigjazi. And then the third state of human consciousness, according to this great professor of the Hollow Earth University, is something called Worm Deeds. It's not spelled with an O. It's W-U-R-M. It's D-E-D-S, standing for the future, right? Where the creepy crawlies come up through the crust, where the various types of insects that, like I said, if they're given a chance, are going to lay an egg in your brain. The great thinkers of the Hollow Earth marvel at the human race. They wonder at the beauty we were given, knowing all too well that it was never Eden. It was simply beautiful, and something we were meant to live with, something we were meant to garden, something we were meant to be stewards of. And then all of a sudden, maybe 100 years ago, maybe 7,000 years ago, perhaps when we started stacking people in cities and pooping into rivers in massive quantities, something went awry. All of a sudden, we abstracted our existence. It wasn't farming and foraging. It wasn't hunting and gathering. It was a city of people, a civilization, right? Because that's where the term comes from, people who live in a city. And in that process, we abstracted everything. We abstracted our connection to food. We abstracted our connection to water. We abstracted our connection to the universe because we had magical priest classes, priest clans, who predicted when the moon would eclipse and predicted when the rain would arrive. And we listened to those guys, and those guys, they weren't always nice guys. The only way through, according to the scientists of the Hollow Earth, was to meditate upon something called Quantodelius, the mad architecture of the broken mind, the broken soul, the broken awareness. Through Quantodelius, we could understand our unconscious, we could regain control of our water and our food and our air, and maybe perhaps one day we might care. I'll stare at my tent looking for those ants trying to find a way in. I'll watch for those black ants as they try to get a hold of a granola bar, as they try to seek after whatever flesh they can control. And maybe one day, in a billion years, even the radioactive waste we leave behind will become inert. Every building, every book, every representation of who and what we were will go away. The sun will be brighter, of course, a billion years from now. And maybe there'll be creatures right about that time. I don't know. Dog people, cat people, hawk people. Perhaps the Monster Cruiser will come up to the surface and populate it with the Sasquatch folk. We don't know. But we're gonna find out, baby. Do you hear a tremor in the earth? That's the Monster Cruiser. It's 1,000 feet long. It's a large metal worm. It tears through the crust. And it does not care about us, baby. Perhaps one day, not a billion years, but maybe 100 years in the future, the Manstra cruiser will drop off some folk, some Bigfoot, some Wookiee, some Sasquatch, and maybe the plants will grow and maybe the trees will be there. And maybe even many of these creatures that are now the creepy crawlies that'll be our neighbors at the end, maybe they will have evolved too and be furry and nice and cute. And maybe at that point, even the people of the Hollow Earth will say, let's build a city. Let's stack the Wookiee people in condos. Let's have a Starbucks. Let's have a McDonald's where we can go there one day and be angry and sad because we don't know what's going on, because we're mystified. If you listen to this podcast, and I don't know if you do, maybe you do. If you listen to this podcast and you want to donate to it, understand a few facts. Number one, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to do it because technically I am homeless. I am looking into veteran housing tomorrow, but let's apply some logic, my friends. If it's any good, chances are that particular inn is full. And for a hobo like me, there isn't a manger, there isn't a barn that they'll let me sleep in. There isn't really a part of the world I'm meant to exist on for a hobo like me. So before I say donate some cash, let's go over the facts. Number one, before you donate to any random dude on the internet, make sure you take care of your food, your water, your shelter. If there are people in your life that need help, remember the airplane. You put on your oxygen mask first and then theirs. You don't put on the oxygen mask of some random dude you never met. So if there are people in your life that need help before you donate money to a random stranger, make sure you help them first. If you've set aside some extra food because some spooky part of your brain is saying, look at Haiti. I mean, I don't know if you know this or not, but the UN World Food Program came out recently and basically said that they do not have the resources to help Haiti. Haiti's not a gigantic country. This isn't India or China or Mexico or the United States. It's a relatively small country. So when the World Food Program says there's no food for a tiny country, what do you think the answer is going to be for a big country? So we should consider these facts when we think about things like helping out random hobos. And once again, as I always say, it's not the end of the world. I mean, it sounds kind of scary. I know I talked about things laying eggs in your brain, but that's kind of a joke, right? It's not the end of the world. Life is kind of difficult right now for a lot of people around the world, not just in the United States. And different parts of this country are experiencing what's going on, mystified or not, in different ways. Parts of this country are still relatively stable. Parts of this country are descending into chaos very slowly, maybe even rapidly. And even with all that, as a reminder, it's not the end of the world. Throughout history, things have gotten shaky for the human race. Supposedly, about 70,000 years ago, as I've mentioned before, a caldera volcano went off and the human race dropped to about 10,000 people. And yet those 10,000 lived. And yeah, you know, they probably killed Neanderthal. Or did other things we can't talk about? I have Neanderthal DNA. Are you imagining Romeo and Juliet, buddy? The human race can endure. And if we can learn our lessons, if we can be brighter and smarter, if we can choose truth and liberty over tyranny and debt, if we can choose to live with nature in a functional way that requires people to be free. You know, people treat freedom like it's a nice to have. I would contend that the absence of freedom is the basis, is the tipping point for an extinction-level event. We need air that's clean. We need water we can drink. We need food we can eat, and we need to be free, because if we're allowed to be free, we form teams as social creatures. We do so voluntarily, and it doesn't require all of us to do the right thing. All it requires is enough of us. If we wait until every single person agrees, then we are quite literally waiting till the end of time. So before you donate some money you don't have to a random dude you don't know, understand that things are still kind of working. You can go to the grocery store. You can get yourself the fixings for a good meal. You can have a party. You can host it. You can go to a movie. There's still things working out there. So why not enjoy it? Nobody's life was ever guaranteed, ever. Nobody was ever promised to have everything. Yeah, throughout history, there are some people who have more than others. Guess what? That's probably never going to change, even if the Sasquatch people take over. So before you donate to me, as I've said previously, donate to yourself. Donate to your own life. Try to find some joy if you can. Because exactly and precisely, what are you waiting for? Are you waiting for some vague tomorrow that might never come? So use your resources wisely, and use them, if you've taken care of the other stuff, to try to be happy. And if you've done all this and you still have gold and silver, Bitcoin and cash, or some type of other transferable asset left over you can convert to a PayPal donation, then feel free to donate if you want to. You don't have to. It's a choice. It should be a choice. It's why I don't have a paywall. Perhaps I don't have a paywall because my podcast sucks, but maybe the reason why I don't have a paywall is because I know a lot of people are hurting out there. It's the same reason I don't bring this up until the end. So if you want to donate, donate. If you don't, don't. Listening to the podcast is donating your time. God bless you. And for Sunday, August the 20th, 2023, Bo Blimpdoc, just after 6:30 p.m., as the sun falls further in the sky, as that golden orb pierces the smoke coming off the Arctic Circle, for Sunday, remember that, yes, there are the creepy crawlies, and probably, if we're complete idiots, those will be our friends when things are just about complete. But every day is an opportunity for enough of us, not everybody, that's a lot of crooked nonsense, but for enough of us to do the right thing. Have a great evening.